So it sounds like it was quite an event then to go down to Henry Badger's and
pick strawberries and have dinner.
Have that wonderful mm-hmm. dinner afterwards.
Right.
It was a pretty close neighborhood, and close in terms of people cooperating with one another, even though you weren't within 50 feet of your next neighbor. You probably couldn't even see your next neighbor, but I guess there was a real feeling of community.
That's right. There was a great community feeling, and if any neighbor was in need, why, we tried to help them out, and they tried to help us out. Mm. If you needed your wood cut, why, somebody would come along and help with your cutting of your logs and so forth, or food, supply you with food. And fish, and our son used to catch fish down here for Harry all the time, and Harry always enjoyed, Harry and Walter really enjoyed the fish.
This would be grailing right off of
the... Right out of the slough, and he loved to catch fish every day in the summertime. And say the Joys were down below, and then there were some other old-timers that were down the road. There was a Norwegian fellow. Can you remember his name, Cliff?
Who was that?
The Norwegian fellow down here on the hill. Woodcutter. I can't remember his name either, but there were a few old-timers out here. And then as people started coming in here, this was after the war that the Petys came in, and Vince Petey did body work. He had a shop downtown, and finally had a heart attack, and it took him, and his wife Betty married Who did Betty Petey marry, dear?
Pardon?
Who did Betty Petey marry?
Oh, I can't.
Right. Who was an old-time miner. Mm-hmm. And they had, he had been married before, and his wife passed away. And they had a son. And then the Petey family had three children, twins, Pat and can't think of his sister's name, and then the young one passed away. Anyhow, so there was just Pat and Pam left, and Pat has a body shop right out here on Petey Road. Mm-hmm. Betty did join in the garden club for a while.
Mm-hmm. So that was a quite important function, I guess, for women out here.
Right. We started the Country Garden Club in this whole area, and it went all the way to the old Richardson Highway. And it was called the Country Garden Club, and the first president was Virginia Gilmore. And I'm the only original charter member mm-hmm. left. Yes. And so then it kind of broke up when it moved closer up here to North Pole, and they started the North Pole Club, and so then they took over a few of the members, and some of the other members opened or started another club, the Green Thumb Garden Club, and I belonged to both of them until maybe the last 6 years, and then I joined Fairbanks Garden Club. Mm-hmm. And I was very active from the very beginning in 1960-61 in the Alaska State Federation of Garden Clubs, and always was a chairman in some field, such as scholarship.
Don't forget the person that was kind of looking after you with the garden clubs and brought
Marge
them
Hagelin.
In.
Marge Hagelin, yeah. Marge Hagelin is the original.
She was under Marge's. Marge and her were very, very good friends from the time she was a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
Or not a little girl, but a young woman.
I guess when you first moved out here, you had to use a generator for lights, and so you were...
Before that, we used just the lamps.
Oh.
Just the gas lamps.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember filling them, and Gloria Coffer, she turned them on, and I wasn't aware of it, and I went to light the lamp, and it just exploded. Okay.
And this would be kerosene.
Gas.
Oh, gas.
Gas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it exploded and burned her eyelashes and the front part of her hair. And I grabbed, at that time, we didn't have any of the inside here. It was just the raw logs,
mm-hmm,
and just an old wooden floor. And this was a barrel stove, and I grabbed the pan of water and just threw it right on her and on the floor and put the fire out because it had gone to the floor. Right.
Oh.
That's very unusual for to put a fire, gasoline fire out with water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, it worked. So
yeah.
You don't have time to think at a time like
no,
that.
No, you don't. Uh-uh.
So you were glad to have Golden Valley come online a few years later.
Well, we did have a generator then, mm-hmm, after that. Cliff insisted that we have a generator because of the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And we did use that, and it was a big generator. We could just snap the light on, and it would come on, wouldn't it, Cliff?
Yes. I went down the following day and ordered $1,000 worth of generating, mm-hmm, equipment, and Lou Joy, he was kind of a chief electrician for the Northern Commercial Company, and he lived then down the road. He is homesteading down there, and so he got a generator too, and then we sat down and we made up the equipment, pardon me, for two. So anytime that you turn on a light of or anything of 100 watts, it'd automatically start that plant out there where my boathouse is.
Oh, pretty nice.
And in the wintertime, you use 100 gallons of unleaded gasoline. A 100 gallons a month. That is it. Yes,
yep.
100 gallons a month. And in the summer, 50. So that made 900 a year of gasoline, 900
and
gallons.
And that was just for your life.
Yes, that. But then she, could use a washing machine and a limited amount.
Well, I don't know.
Pardon?
I don't know if I had a washing machine then.
Oh, sure.
I didn't think I did.
The thing was that, and the electric pump for water.
Oh, yeah, for your well water.
Mm-hmm.
That you'll remember, that
yeah,
it started
mm-hmm
with that.
Mm-hmm.
And any of those switches that took 100 watts or more, why, it'd start the plant going mm-hmm out.
So then, how did you get organized with Golden Valley? Did you talk to some of your neighbors first about it, or approach people downtown?
Pardon?
Golden Valley.
Golden Valley.
Beginning of Golden Valley.
Could you talk a little bit about the beginning of Golden Valley? You were a charter
member.
Well,
we were, around that time, to be honest with you, I didn't think that the government would put out money for to bring REA in. Most of us, but I was familiar with it from down stateside, as another man was, the REA coming into the West.
Mm-hmm.
And but we had so few people out and around that we just kept working with it, and it seemed like, to be honest with you, most of these people had come up from the Department of Agriculture down in Washington, D.C. It was a free trip to Alaska, see? You get that? And we had one man that his, him and his wife were pretty good politicians, and he's going to university besides doing other work, that they built a home close to the university. And when these fellows had come up, he'd go with somebody else, meet them, bring them over, and he had a wife that went along with this. Well, we got down to the point where, oh, this looks encouraging, you know, but they never took anyone out in the bush any distance. But we had always a lot of people coming to the meetings, and most of them were from town. Then they said, well, you have to make up the maps, or we'll send you or get a map of the country, and you mark where your potential customers are. Next thing I knew, the other fellows voted that I would be the one to put down on the map where the potential customers were. I thought, oh man, it's impossible. And then I happened to think about that GI deal, that if you homesteaded when you were in the service, you had 5 years to come back, you know, mm-hmm. to do something with it. And so Tom Hunt, the Bureau of Land Management, he was the one ahead of, you know, the as far as land office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I knew him fairly well, and so he seen me going through the maps. He said, I know what you're up to, Hayden, but don't tell your wife, don't tell the other fellas, don't tell anybody, because right then, the Northern Commercial Company had been notified by the sister city that they weren't going to give the NC Company any more leases or signed for furnishing. You see, the Northern Commercial Company up at that time, they furnished the power for the city, electricity. They had the power plant in the old building. And so, right at the start, when we mentioned REA, they came, the city fathers, they were being honest. They didn't think it would ever work. And why don't you go in with us and let us run some short lines out of the city, like out here, you know, there's a few people. And what they were trying to do was to guarantee that they had all the power for the area, the electrical potential. Mm. Well, I said, we'll just wait it out and see. And they'd laugh at me and kid me once they heard that I made up the maps. And you see why Mr. Hunt said, oh, Hayden, just don't breathe to anybody about that. Finally, the man came up from Washington to check the potential customers. And then he came back to town with these other fellows, and they called me at the job, and they said, hey, could you come downtown to the hotel? I said, yeah, I'll get somebody stand by. And I went downtown, and oh, this man was awful nice, but from the, you know, Department of Agriculture controlled it in Washington. But oh, he said, a person that's been civil service, military, and everything like you, and purge yourself. I went around with Mr. Idem and some of these other, John Gilmore, and Gilmore Acres, John, you know.
Oh, yeah, Gilmore Trail. Mm-hmm.
And, don't forget Tilly Brockman. Good old Tilly. Did you know her?
I knew who she was.
Yes.
Springs Road.
And they took them out and around. I couldn't find any of the places marked on this as potential customers. I said, that's all right. Just come with me. And I took him down to the land office, and I asked Mr. Hunt to get out the maps of the areas, and I introduced this fellow from Washington, what he's here for. And he laid those maps down, and then I said to Tom, I said, what is this where these little X's are and numbers and whatnot? Oh, that's where military people homesteaded as they're getting out of the, you know, not out of the service, but being moved someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, this man said, what does that have to do with it? The fellow from Washington. Well, must I say that ground is in good standing for 5 years. They got 5 years to come back.
So that was an advantage then.
Huh?
That was an advantage for your plan.
Yes.
Yeah, very definitely.
And he said, well, that's the law, that's the law. And so we asked for $90,000, and we got, when the man got back there, he sent us $270,000. And that's really the only worthwhile thing I done for the REA.
Okay, that was... And accomplishment.
By the way,
because it wouldn't have gone otherwise.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
made it work.
The one other little thing, you know, that darn little Joy, he was the one who got me in on the REA. Thought, you know, how nice it would be, because he had homesteaded out here too, see.
Mm-hmm.
And but he was fair, and he was president of the school board for so long, nobody remembered when he started.
The school named after him.
When I was single, he said, you know, Hayden, what we ought to do? I said, now what are you thinking about? Well, he said, you're single and swear you're never going to get married, and so they can't say you have some alternative, you know, motive for this. But let's get the school district extended clear down to about, 9 Mile Badger Road and out and around, and you go talk to the fellows and see if they'll sign this petition to extend the school district. And I said, look, they'll run me out because they'll figure there'd be taxes. Well, tell them you'll pay their taxes. And I did, and I went around and I talked to them, of course. Mrs. Nordell and Jelmer, they were all for it. Mm-hmm. And Art Brown down at Brown's Quarry Hill here, why, he was for it. So I got everybody to sign up, and I never had to pay any taxes.
So that's got the school.
That was then, in those days. But they got a little even with me for a few years until I got old, but now they'll be back after me again.
Well, when our son got to be old enough to go to school, there weren't enough children out here.
There weren't 5 children on this whole Badger Road. Uh-uh.
And so an agreement was made with the base that if they would take the base children into town, the base would send a bus out here to bus our children into Ladd Air Force Base.
Yes. Yeah. So then, of course, the only thing for us to do was, I had the privilege of living on Ladd Air Force Base if I wished. Well, the only other thing was, I was GIE even in high school. I was in an only ROTC junior unit in the state of Washington. It was in Walla Walla, Washington. And oh, I like to get out there in that old World War I, you know, officer's outfit, swing a saber around, and old Colonel Holmes said, Hayden, that's what you should go for, instead of being a lawyer or a doctor or something like that. Join the military.
Be a career man. Military.
I took everything military after that. you know, and so anyway, it helped me tremendously, my military training, once I decided to work for the services. I could sit down and I could talk to General Gaffney, went in as a major, and agree or disagree, as long as I said, now with due respect, General, or Colonel, or Major. And he never asked me if I'd ever been in the service or anything, but he could tell that I had some experience. So, anyway, he was certainly a very, very good friend of mine. And I told him once war came on, I said, now this is how that, but I couldn't imagine anybody not wanting their husbands to be in the service.
Oh, that's when you joined up before you got married.
Well, we only went together 1 month. Mm-hmm. You know, that was all we dated, and then we ran off and got married, so
you find out.
And then here, right away, quick, Gaffney seen I got a T5, you know, on my sleeve, and I was wearing. You've seen the pictures of Aria and I when we were young, and she had a fur coat, and I had a flying
jacket,
mm-hmm. And and Gaffney said, "Well, what are we going to do for people?" He said, here, you got stuck here. You work 10 shifts a week. We're writing overtime even for Ashman. What are we going to do? You know, that's funny. A colonel is sitting there talking to me like that, you know. He was an old friend, see. That's the way I felt from the time I met him.
He's a pretty personable guy.
So, anyway, I said, I got an idea. All right, now, what's this idea? I always got a lot of ideas. Well, I said, put out an order to all your commanders, company commanders around here, you know, and anyway, maybe you don't want to hear this stuff. If they had any people that had any experience at all, around firing steam boilers or anything like that, or electrical power plant, or even if they had a high school education with mechanical aptitude, that if they wished to qualify in the power plant, explained to them that they would not, under any consideration, be moved away from Ladd Air Force Base. They would have good housing, good food, and they would have an opportunity to learn even more about power plants.
So you talked yourself into a job.
And we got, but Gaffney says, who in the world's going to teach them? I said, I am. Oh, he says, you said you wanted to wreck airplanes. I did, but I've changed my mind. I said, okay, it's up to you. They will be responsible to you, and all decisions about them, although they have to work with other people. He said, I'll make you a warrant officer. I said, oh, no, you won't. Why not? I said, they like me with a T5 on my arm. And oh, when she found out about that, actually, that was, well, to the average human being, that would be a blow. But these guys, they'd do anything for me. They'd work double shifts,
You're a good boss.
So
they thought he was a stinker lots of times. But afterwards, when they got the other one, they changed their minds.
Oh, well.
Yeah, so, you know, then what Gaffney done when I got out of an old age, out of the service, at 35 months, Why? And he was up here just a few days after I got out. He was a general in command of Alaska Yukon Command, shipping airplanes and supplies to Russia.
Oh, the Lend-Lease.
And his headquarters were in Edmonton.
So he left Fairbanks after that and went to Edmonton.
He had come and go, you know, visit now and then.
Oh, I see. So he had made periodic visits back to Fairbanks all the
time. But his headquarters was
Edmonton.
Edmonton during the getting of planes and stuff to Russia and supplies.
So your military job really turned into a civilian job. Your power plant job turned into a civilian job, and you stayed there.
Well, I wrote myself a 3-day pass and went back to work. And then personnel called me up after Gaffney. He was about getting ready to retire, too, as a war, you know, with being finished up. Mm-hmm. So they...
Just 1 minute. What you said...
But did we have... You could see where they kind of liked me a little bit. Gaffney said, where do you want to put your men that you collect for the power plant? Oh, quartermasters. You do? Yeah, sure. They got the best food on top of that. Everybody pitched in a dollar, and they hired KPs. And I tell you, it was like being in a fancy restaurant or hotel or something. Those KPs was going on the run, because when they split up that dollar for everybody, that was far more money than most of GIs got, see?
Mm-hmm.
You got the idea where they hired the KPs is people wanting the job. And boy, they did a good job. There was a few little rough things, but not bad. But they really could do the work, and they learned, a good many of them, they made a career of that work. Some even stayed over.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got about ready to get my first paycheck, personnel called up, and they said, would you come over here? I said, yeah, I'll come over. What do you want? I'll come over. And they held up a paper for me, an order. And I said, what's this? Well, when old DVG, that's what people call Gaffney, what not to his face, of course. Before he left the field the last time, he signed paper, filled out papers where you were raised from a lieutenant's equivalency rating to a major. If I wished it, I got to housing, I had priority on everything. So that's how come I never asked him for anything other than I suggested a few things. Mm-hmm. He never asked me other than, would you do this, or would you? He never asked if I could do it, or something like that. Well, would you do this, Hayden, or would you do that? And I tried to pattern off of his way of doing things, never yelling at anybody. I never, even he didn't do that with a second lieutenant. Lieutenant, would you do this?
Mm-hmm. So he was a real good boss.
Yeah.
Good role model.
Some more water?
So we were talking about Gaffney, that you patterned your way of dealing with your men, the way he dealt with you and others. So
he asked his commanders to put an order up, or not an order, but a bulletin stating that there'd be these positions available for anyone that wished. And it is amazing how many did, because they were guaranteed there'd be. Well, they certainly weren't wanting to lose anybody that wish to work in the power plants.
Mm-hmm. Now, these would be civilian, or would they still be military, or both?
Pardon?
They'd be both?
Some that's of just be... military.
Oh, see. Just military.
Oh. Well, no civilians want to do it. Mm-hmm. There's a few. You pick up a few, like we could pick up some of these old miners that worked with boilers and stuff, but some of them even, they would work in the wintertime, and then they go back out to their claims in the summer, see?
They want them year-round.
But I am primarily, my dealings, well, I dealt with anybody that happened to be in the power plants, but my specialty was, or my main job for even staying at Ladd Air Force Base was to work with the military, that we got in to work in the plants. And although that I had to treat everyone the same, you know, who worked with me. But so, no, it worked out good, and that idea of hiring the KPs, the men all liked that. And where would you find better food than with the quartermasters? Because hey, he's the one that brought all the food in.
Yeah, had first pick. So you continued with this job until you retired, in, was it 1973? What was it like during the flood? I imagine you were on duty long hours when we had the 1967 flood.
The 67 flood?
Yes. What are some of
well,
your...
let's get to throw in a, the, when it was 72 below. Wouldn't you like to go to
oh,
work then?
Well.
Oria and my daughters were staying downtown because one daughter had eye trouble and couldn't ride the bus. And...
Yeah, uh-huh.
So you're talking about 72 below
oh,
zero.
Yes.
That winter.
Yeah, well, anyway, regardless of why she was in the Fairview Manor, why, we had a draw, a good old dog named Tramp. And him and I were out here, and I'd go in and visit them down there occasionally. But in this cold weather, why, all at once, let's see, that was in...
Do you remember which winter it was?
January of 1961. Hmm. And... So it just kept getting a little colder and a little colder, and I had an old GMC pickup, and I put it in a shed. There was no heat in here, and it out here, and but I did have a big head bolt heater on it, circulator. And I tell you, I turn the key, and of course that had the engine hot, and it'd start right up. And then I didn't want to burn the clutch out, so I'd hit it a little bit and a little bit and move out, back out, and then I'd head down the road, and the wheels was going bump, bump, and I had as much air in them as I could possibly get in without blowing them off the rims. And Ori had called up a neighbor here and say, did
Earth name.
Hayden go to work this morning? Oh, yeah, I heard him going bump, 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 bump. And the first time, the first day of 72, why, by gollies, I pulled up in front of the power plant, and I was just going very slow. And I put one wheel right against the curb, you know, it just kind of bumped a little. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys just getting out of his rig there said, Hayden, just messed up a tire. I tell you, it didn't take much of a bump. It just looked like somebody had hit a windshield with a hammer, you know, mm-hmm. shatterproof. And that's the way the tire looked. And round on it. Well, the Gardena, I had new tires. I kept new tires on every all the time. The Gardena on them said that bruises, rock bruises, or anything else, that if it hurt the tire, they'd give me a new tire. So, of course, I just turned around and told the fellas to tell the guy on duty that I had to go down to the tire outlet, or I got the tire. Went in, said, have somebody look at my tire. He said, Hayden, I know what's wrong with it. You bumped something, and we'll make it good. And they had a young man working in there, and he said to him, now, if you throw another tire down out of that loft and hit on the concrete, you're going to pay for it. Now, that's how when easy it was to mess them up. So, anyway, getting back to, well, I just come out here long enough for to see the dog had food, and he was all right. He had an insulated fiberglass doghouse out here. And he had nice fur, and
a blanket over the door, and a blanket over the door.
Oh, yes.
When he'd go in, he'd pull the blanket in with him.
See, the kids trained him when he's a pup to do that. Is going, kind of swat him a little, go in the doghouse, tramp. And he'd take his head, and when he did that, then his body would pull that piece of blanket in. And then when he wandered out, he just lifted up and come on out. So, anyway, otherwise, I stayed down at the power plant. One night, first night, it was 72, and I'd go up and around, and we agreed that we'd have the people working in the plant check the whole plant every half hour, you know. We had put an extra man or two on shift so that they could go around and check things. So I went up on top of the power plant, looked out in the ice fog, and here comes this young fellow up there, and he said, Mr. Hayden, aren't you afraid we'll lose the load or something? We've got not only hundreds but thousands of GIs, their families, their children out there, and they're depending on us for heat. Doesn't it kind of scare you? I said, it don't scare me any. I said, do you know your job description? Yes. You know what you're to do if the plant jumps off the line? Something goes wrong? Do you know anybody that doesn't? That's what I want to know. No. Well, I said, you guys operate the plant. I don't. That's your responsibility. And he turned, you know, and walked away and practically found himself. He realized he was important, and he was. If any one of those men that had to know in their job something went wrong.
Yeah, the whole system would go down.
Yeah. Hmm. And then we, not all that, but we all got right up in our 201 files, you know. That's your personal history. Maybe you're familiar with that. The records, everyone had a 201 file. That's all your personal stuff in there. So we got, everybody got a commander wrote us a note of appreciation to being able to
keep it going
and everything. But then we go on over to 67. That's the year of 25th year of statehood, which I didn't like anyway.
Yeah, that was a big year for a lot of things.
Anyway, I was very independent. But you might have thought the water came down that little creek or river out there, but it didn't. It just came right straight through the trees over yonder.
And so you had some water in this house.
Oh, yes.
Quite a bit.
And so I dashed home to see how Oreo was doing.
But all he was interested in was taking pictures of the water rising. And luckily, our son came home, and the wife that he was married to at that time came over to see what she could do to help us, because they were on higher ground. Mm-hmm. And so all the lights were out. We had no electricity then, because the water had risen so much. And I went down in the basement, it was dark, with just a flashlight, trying to salvage what I could. And all I was able to do was get clothing out of there, and sheets and things like that, and a few books, but I wasn't able to get all the things I wanted to get out of there. Mm-hmm. Because there was no way I could carry them all, and it was hard with a flashlight and just she and I. And Melinda, what she could do, but Melinda was just a little girl then. Well, she was around 12. And we took out what we could, but his tools and his books were all ruined. And the pictures all got wet, the pictures of Blanche and the family. And Clifford and Jacqueline and one other fellow, one of the boys from down the road, moved all the furniture out of this part of the house, put it on the trailer, and moved it over with the pickup into their yard and just left it there. And so it was safe, but we had to leave this area in a boat. We took our boat that's out in the boathouse, and it was terrible. It took so long to get out of the driveway. We kept trying to, that big old boat, to try and row it out, and it was really difficult. It took a long time, but we finally got it out to the driveway. The driveway was higher at that time than what it is today. It was higher than where we are now, but see, since that time, the whole house has been raised. And so we drove on in to town and went to a friend of ours' house. And they rented rooms, and we asked him for a room. So as we were going to bed, he came in and told us that we'd have to evacuate because the town was being flooded as well. So we went to Lathrop High School. And after Cliff got us settled down, and I had our little granddaughter from across the way with me, the boy, they didn't let the boy come with me, he was older, but the little granddaughter was only about 6 months old. Cliff took off and got back in one of those big rigs. The water was so high downtown, you had to, the water covered your boots. You just got soaked all the way through. And they were sending these great big, what do they call them, 4x4 military rigs all around to transport people from home to school. And yeah.
Central place.
Right.
Yes,
uh-huh. Right. And so he left us, and that's the last I saw of him for months. Our daughter became ill. Maybe you don't want that on there. Our daughter became ill while she was there, and I had to send her out to her sister. Her sister was married by then. And then when I came out here, there was no place for me to stay, and no way I could cook food or anything. And the whole basement had caved in. And so I was sleeping in the car on top of the clothes and hangers and so forth. So I decided, I guess the best thing to do is to go on out with Melinda and stay at Gloria's for a while and get Melinda settled in school, because she was so ill here. She had had lobar pneumonia the winter before, and the winters had just become too severe for her. So I took her to a doctor in Spokane, and she was to see the doctor every week and put her in Holy Names Academy or schooling. And I stayed out there maybe about a month and a half, I don't remember now, and finally came back.
It was longer than a month you stayed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when I did come back, that's right, until you got quarters on base, and he got quarters on base again.
So you had a place to.
I said, I got it made. I got on base again.
Yeah.
And this old general likes me, you know.
So anyway, that's when I came back.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the aftermath of the flood was really something for people. It was itself with major structural damage. Mm-hmm. Well, how did you keep the power plant going during the flood? Did you get flooded or, I can't remember. The power plant finally had to shut down for the worst of it.
Pardon?
The power plant during the flood.
Oh, how did I get back the power plant?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was at Lathrop with them, you know, mm-hmm. and, I thought, well, gee, I better do something around here. And I didn't know at first what condition the other two supervisors, my boss and the fellow with the equivalency rating I had, what happened to them. Then while walking around, I found both of them they had a kind of a sick bay. And they were laying there shivering like everything. And they'd waited around that cold water till, you know, it is getting to them. And so I went out, and by golly, I saw a big 6x6 sitting out there and a big old rough sergeant saying, VIP's over here going to the command post at Wainwright. And I walked over and I started to talk to him. He gave me a push out of the way, you know, only VIPs. And I spots myself a first lieutenant with a telephone, you know, and a walkie-talkie phone. And I went over there and I threw my voice up like a major and I said, Lieutenant! Yes, sir? I said, I'm so-and-so from Fort Wainwright. And I am General Foreman is Central Heat and Power. And would you contact General Wheeler or the Lieutenant Colonel that's in charge of the utilities, what you'd call them, they called them the utilities engineers. And he had his button down and they could hear me in the, you know, the command post, they said, you get that Hayden out here immediately. And boy, he went over and he pushed that big sergeant out of the way, and the sergeant was looking funny. He said, help him in there.
You got to ride back.
You got to be tough. So then, as you saw, perhaps one citation I got was for getting the plant immediately. I just started, as soon as I could start pumping water out of the old power plant, that is the easiest one. The utilities engineer said, well, wherever you want to start, well, it is, with the old power plant, it was smaller, and the equipment, most of it was up on the main floor where that big one you see from drive down the road. Why, so much of their stuff is down in the basement, see? Mm-hmm. And so I knew it would be a while. The water would all have to go down quite a bit. So I started with the old one right away, and it didn't take us too long to get it to going, and I had it. I had to even blow the whistle now and then, you know. Oh, Willard call up me and say, well, I see you're on the job again today, Hayden. You blow it in the morning and the evening. How's things going there? Well, I said, not too bad. So he had at that time, the only other real steam electrical engineer. See, I was a steam electrical engineer, but these other engineers, they're steam engineers or electrical. My boss, oh, he was, Cliff Carlson was a wonderful electrical engineer.
But he knew something about steam, but he wasn't a steam engineer. But he knew, you know, the principles. He had worked for FE some, and then...
NC.
Huh?
NC.
NC mostly, mm-hmm. Yes. And but there was one other steam electrical engineer, but he was raised right. His father had been steam electrical engineer for some big outfit in Chicago. And so when his son, Walt, got old enough, he told his father he wanted to be one. The father sent him to really where he went through college and put in a lot of time at it, and then he got himself a job at Anchorage for the Air Force. That is back when I was with the Air Force. And as he came through, as he shipped through, why, they had to lay over on the Matt's plane for an hour or two at LAD, and he come over and he rang the bell, and I happened to be on shift. And so he introduced himself, and him and I became very, very good friends, even though he is down at Anchorage. Walt Bagley was the guy's name. And so, anyway, what did they do? They sent Walt to Wainwright to be a kind of assistant to General Wheeler, you know, as an advisor, I should say, not an assistant, an advisor. Mm-hmm. And they do, the armed services do things like that quite a bit. When, like the Army, if they need an advisor, they'll go to the Navy or the Air Force or something.
Wherever they can get the person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so this went on. Oh, we got the, wasn't too long till we got the, after I got the steam up, till, Bob Huffman. You know Bob Huffman?
Oh, yes. No.
He was with Golden Valley at that time. And oh, is he one nice fellow, that Bob. And he called me up and he said, Hayden, I've discovered that our diesel generators over where the area is, where their headquarters are now, they have several, they at that time, diesels. They have some diesels up here at North Pole too, but those there were fair size. He said, the generators are up above, set above the water in the building. And he said, if I had some diesel, why, I could put out a lot of electricity, not only for our area, our people, but also, you know, for the Army. And I said, okay. I just picked up a phone, called the fellows up on the hill where the diesel, pardon me. Yeah. The phone. I had the authority to do things like that, clear back from the time of Gaffney, and order stuff, you know. And so I said, fill up a tanker tomb, send it down to Huffman, Golden Valley, and no time at all. So, shucks, we had a lot of electricity, you see. And, but then, so, but it kept going on and on, and sure we had lights, and but the utility doors were all full of water. And in fact, it got so late, it was starting to freeze, and anybody knows, and that if we didn't do something radical pretty quick, that those utilidors had frozen, it had froze all the piping and everything else, you know, when it got real cold. So I got to make this quick and get rid of it. And, Walt talked it over with General Wheeler, and he said, I know, but they said they have to have another crew come make a survey, or don't put the steam in those lines, it'll break the flanges, it'll do this and that. And then it had to have another survey crew out of from the Pentagon or something, the manufacturers. And, so Walt told Wheeler, he said, there's no sense in this. We got a man here that knows more about it. Instead, he's always poking his nose into something that wasn't supposed to be his business. But when they tested the metal that went into those flanges and into those utilidors and so forth, he was right there with them. That was me, see? Mm-hmm. He said, turn him and his commandos, that's what they call my prize crew, loose. They'll take care of it. So he came over that one evening rather late, and we're talking it over. But Wheeler said, oh, if you guys louse up, I don't know you, because I've been getting it in the neck ever since the flood. And what the deal was, they told him to wait for the civil defense before making a move about the water.
Didn't have that kind of time.
No, they didn't ever. There's all a saying, it's cresting, and it was cresting when 3 foot of it was coming across the runway. So
caught everybody off guard.
So, yeah, and so anyway, the next morning I said, now, Walt, I'll take care of it here, but you know what to do when the steam gets in those lines. Then you and I agree, the only way to do that is pump it out very, very slowly. Then the steam will come up a little bit more, you know, in the lines, and get a little bit gradual. Everything has to be gradual. Well, the next morning, they couldn't see when it got daylight, they didn't notice daylight. I had such a fog over the whole Fort Wainwright, see, that steam warmed up that water in those utilidors, and when it was at around 30 degrees outside,
created its own ice fog.
And the next thing I knew, I'd laid down, take myself a little nap in the office, although I wasn't sleeping because I knew they'd be coming. And sirens are blown and everything, command cars, and even Wheeler was one. Who gave the order to put the steam in those utilidors? I said, I don't know. Well, let's go down to the boiler room, and you can see where the steam, you know, flow gradually came up there. They said, well, those guys is as big a liar as I was. Well, we thought maybe a line had broken. Our orders is keep up the steam, see?
You were just following orders. Well, that was certainly...
So, nice. You know what? After that was all over, why they sent a guy around, they said, this is about some kind of a general came from at the Pentagon, and he says, you know, you fellas done pretty good. And I said, why did my fellas do that? Well, he got credited with saving Fort Wainwright. And I said, what did Wheeler have to do with it? Anything? I said, listen, when you have a general as good as Wheeler, and it was true, we used to have talks, you know. I belonged to officers' club and all that, and I'd go over to eat, and we'd have talks, and here I knew he was really a wonderful person, and when I'd suggest we do this or that, well, let's talk this over. Then he'd go along with it, see? That's a good idea. I said, how could you let a general like that down? Which is true. And so, anyway, when it came time for him to retire, He got a little jump to two-star general, I think. And then when it was all straightened out before he left, why, he called up personnel and said, give Hayden a lieutenant colonel's equivalency rating. Well, we can't do that. His supervisor, Carlson, is a lieutenant colonel. Give him a colonel. But it got in that deal. Carlson was born with a bad heart. But he had wanted to get in the service, but his heart was just bad enough that they wouldn't take him. Then the flood hit. And when they had him down there and he was doing all that shivering and whatnot, and for a few days at the hospital, they discovered he was real bad. This stuff where you have to take insulin all the time. You know.
Oh, insulin, you said?
Hmm?
What did you say, insulin?
It's real.
Yeah, diabetes. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I begged him to stick around, but it got too much, he said. And my health, and he said, and now politics is crawling in. He said, I got 29 years, Hayden, and I'm going to go over at the water plant and try to hang on till I get to 30.
30, yeah.
Yeah, that's what he's doing. I couldn't have done it. But so they never even asked me if I wanted Carlson's rating. When Carlson retired, I got the full colonel.
Yeah, so you stayed in until 1973, and so you can retire.
Pardon?
So you stayed as in the power plant until 1973.
Yeah, last day of June.
Yeah, so you've been retired exactly 20 years then.
And anyway.
20 years.
Yeah, this is.
But, you know, I could have never, I know it is harder than her, but listen, I had a job that I knew, as you can tell, real well. I learned it when I was young. But stateside, you couldn't get a job the type I was had, even as a shift foreman, without, as a steam electrical engineer, without, they'd say, how much experience have you had, or all that kind of stuff, see?
So you really learned it on the job very well.
So then I done a lot of other things. I
would fill another few tapes,
worked,
too.
Played around Southeastern until I thought that was enough, you know. I love that job.
Mm. Yeah, until you did.
And
that was his life. Yeah. That's wonderful to really enjoy what you're doing, to be good at it, and then to have the satisfaction of really helping a community.
But, yes, that's...
Yeah.
No, but I know it was hard on her, but after all, if you do something and you know you're helping people.
That's a pretty good feeling. Well, I enjoyed talking to both of you this afternoon.
I didn't tell you my work experience or anything.
Okay, and then I went to work for the city in 66 and worked until just before the flood. And he'd had a heart attack and he was very ill, so I thought maybe I should quit. But then after the flood, I knew that I would be needed, so I went to work for the borough then. Mm-hmm. That was the beginning of the borough. And, I guess they'd been in operation about a year. And I worked there for 7 years. And from there, then, I went to North Star Council on Aging and worked as a secretary for them for a while. And then from there out to the University of Alaska for the Marine Science Department.
Mm. A lot of people in that. And then you've taken some classes in the meantime.
Yeah, I've taken classes off and on through all the years. Mm-hmm. And And I'm still taking classes.
I've heard that people who retire never really retire. They get very busy. And by the looks of things, I think you have a lot going on, both of you. And mm-hmm. That's a wonderful way to do things. Yeah, thank you.